Hi, this is Stephen Piercy from Rat. You're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hi, this is Chris Slade, drummer of AC/DC and many other people, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hi, this is Phil Cohen from Def Leppard and Man Ray. You're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hello and welcome to episode 550 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host, John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 550, we are pleased to welcome back once again from Bon Jovi. We have Phil X joining us to talk about a new album with Phil X and the Drills. And then in just a little while, we'll get to one of Billy Idol's longtime band members. He's been with the band, Billy Idol's band, for about 10 years now. Paul Trujillo, who's got a new solo album coming out later on this year, and he's got a new leadoff single out now. So we're going to talk to Paul about that in just a little bit. Phil X, if you recall, was on the podcast going back probably 6 years at this point. I believe it was 2019 or somewhere in that vicinity. An amazing musician. If you haven't really looked into his work, I highly encourage you to check out his YouTube channel and go back. We actually talk about the videos in the interview, to some of the videos he created that really helped get him into the job with Bon Jovi. John Shanks had caught wind of his videos, checked him out. The playing speaks for itself. The personality is electric. You may have recalled he worked with Tommy Lee on Tommy Lee's solo album. He was in Frozen Ghost, for those of you who remember Frozen Ghost. He's done a lot of studio work, and he kind of talks about that, you know, being kind of the chameleon in the studio, and then now being able to kind of be Phil X because of the opportunities that Bon Jovi has afforded him. So it's a really kind of a cool discussion. He talks about kind of a Spinal Tap thing going on with the new record, where he's got a bunch of different drummers ranging from Tommy Lee to Ray Lucier, who's no stranger to Western Pennsylvania, the drummer of Korn. Tico Torres, obviously, Bon Jovi plays on the record as well. So Powell, Right in the Kisser will be available on March 28th. Without further ado, let's get into that interview with Phil X.
I love changing seasons. I've got my reasons. I'm moving to California. The only thing that breaks the sweat, and all I fear is regret. I'm on my way. My bags are packed.
my pleasure to welcome to Iron City Rocks. We have on the line Phil X. How you doing, Phil?
Dude, I'm awesome. How you doing?
I am doing great. You are about to drop a new full-length album, Phil X and the Drills, or as I always want to call it, Phil and the Drills, because it just flows. Can you talk a little bit about these songs? I enjoy sort of the Spinal Tap drummer aspect of it. You and Daniel kind of working with a multitude of amazing drummers. Obviously, you don't have drummers exploding, but you've got a bunch of different heavyweights on the drums there. Can you talk a little bit about the lifespan of these songs? Where did they kind of start?
Yeah, and I am very grateful that there no one spontaneously combusted. It's crazy. It was like 10 years in the process, and then we actually gave a sneak peek, if you will, in 2019 with Stupid Good Lookings Volume 1. Mm-hmm. And we just, in 2014, I wanted to record a record, and it's the drummer, the LA drummer story. Even when you're playing live, you're like, if you have a great drummer in your band, he plays in 5 to 10 bands. Mm-hmm. And you'd be like, hey man, we got a gig at the Whiskey on Friday. Oh man, I'm sorry, I'm already booked. And then drummer number two, hey man, we're playing at the Whiskey next Friday. Sorry, dude, I'm on the road. It just happened all the time. So in 2014, when I wanted to record a record, Randy Cook was playing with us at the time. He's another Canadian. We go way, way back. And I think he was going on the road with The Voice, or he also plays with Smash Mouth. I'm like, hey, I want to record the record in June. And he's like, oh, dude, I'm on the road until September. And then in the meantime, I'm doing sessions, and I find myself at a session with Josh Fries. We've played on a bunch of records together. I don't even know how many. And expressing my disgruntlement / frustration of drummers. And he goes, oh, I'll play in a few songs. And I'm like, wow. And then Chris Chaney was on bass, and he was like, hey, I can get Taylor Hawkins to play in a couple of songs. And then the light bulb went on, like, wow, we could have a few drummers on this record. And a few turned into a different drummer on every song. And the funny thing about it, even though Josh sparked the idea, we could never get our schedules together to get them on a track or two. So, but we so sure got the bases covered. But, you know, going back to 2014, it was on this record, the first song I think was going back is You Sunk My Battleship with Brian mm-hmm. Tichy on drums. And then flash forward to 2024 with Tosh Peterson on Seemed Like a Good Idea. We recorded that in October of last year. So, and everything in between. Then you get Ray Luzier happening, and then you're on the road with Bon Jovi and have a day off in Vegas and ask Tico to play on a song, and he does. And then find yourself in New York playing 2 sold out nights at Madison Square Garden and invite Liberty DeVito to, legendary drummer, might as well go with the legendary studio, Power Station. So he came in and played on a track. And then everybody in between, you know, Tommy Lee was a thing because I played on all his solo records. So asking him to play my record was, hey, dude, you know, and he's like, yeah, dude. So it was kind of like that.
I can imagine that the palpable energy with the two of you in a studio at one time.
And it happened, man. It happened.
How do you keep it sounding cohesive? Because the one thing when I listen to the record, I don't sense, you know, this is a 10-year span, nor do you. I mean, you can pick out differences in the drumming if you really listen closely, but it doesn't sound like, you know, a tribute album or something like that, where, you know, you're in 17 different directions. It still sounds very cohesive.
See, that was a feat in itself, to be honest, because I thought in the beginning, you know, if the common denominator is me, like my voice and my guitars, and Daniel Spree and his bass and his background vocals, and us piling our voices on for choruses, I thought that's enough to keep it cohesive. But it ended up being shooting myself in the foot. It came to time to mastering, because also Chris Lord-Alge mixed two songs on this record and we mixed the rest. Okay. So when I was going to Mao or Applebaum, our mastering guy, he's like, it doesn't sound like the same record, dude. Like, oh, so me, and it wasn't like, here's the stuff, master away.
Yeah.
At least he didn't just take the money and run. At least he was like, no, dude, we got to do this right. I love these songs. I wanted to sound like the same record.
Right.
So he put himself into the mix on a personal level, which was really amazing for me. So, you know, this one's not right yet. Okay, I would tweak it and send it back. Okay, now we're getting closer. Now we're getting closer. And then at the end of the day, let me know what you think. He sent me the record and I was like, okay, to me, this could be a little better. So I tweaked the song, sent it back to him, sent me the record again. And I mean, I think he's a big part of it sounding cohesive. So thank you, Maul.
Yeah.
And, yeah. What? I mean, so, but it was a big job, which makes me want to just get into the studio with Brent Fitz and Daniel Spree for 3 days to record the next 10 songs.
Yeah, that would be the ultimate. You spend 10 years making a record and then spend a few days making the follow-up. That would
life is a roller coaster. It has its, you know, peaks and valleys. And there was, you know, Bon Jovi records that came out in between and tours that happened in between and worked on other records and other tours. And then just coming home from a tour and just wanting to not even think about music for weeks at a time, being a dad. So, and then you get the itch again and then you're back in it. So that's the other extension of time.
Is being in Bon Jovi in some ways afford you a little more time to do some of this stuff? As odd as that sounds, because obviously you guys aren't as on the road as much as probably anyone would like. But does that give you more time to do this and maybe, you know, a steadier source of income to be able to kind of explore some of these things?
Well, honestly, it's not a steady source. If we're not working, we're not.
Yeah.
That the source is gone. So, but what it has afforded me to be able to do stuff is a lot of session work, which is even in 2020 when everything live canceled and I was like, how am I going to feed my kids?
Yeah.
You know, the same panic everybody felt. And, but in June of 2020, I started doing sessions at home. You know, people started making music again and needed guitar parts. So I was getting sent sessions via Dropbox. And then I would lay down guitars. And then I would send the guitars via Dropbox or WeTransfer. And then there was PayPal in the account the next day. So, I mean, that Chris Lord-Alge was a big part of that because he was helping, you know, he was just, hey, I need guitars and you got guitars and you can record guitars. So let's do this, you know, not in the same room with masks on. So that, you know, he saved my life that year and moving forward. But, you know, it to me, it was the Bon Jovi thing has afforded me fans. Mm-hmm. Like even we did 3 shows in Texas last weekend with the Drills. It was cool because we were playing the new singles. We played Fake the Day Away and we played Moving to California, which was the second single. And I think in Dallas, we played Don't Wake Up Dead, from which was the first single that came out in December. So it was really cool to, you know, test the new material. But I mean, fans were coming from all over the place, but that have been coming from all over the place because of my association with Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
So, which is amazing because, I mean, I don't think people would travel, oh, well, it's Phil X from Bon Jovi and he's got his own project. Let's go check it out. I mean, they've become fans because they like it. So that's also a really cool thing too.
Yeah, I think some of it has to do with just, you know, honestly, maybe obviously a lot of people were introduced to your name very suddenly. A much wider audience. And then you capitalized, I think, in a way, maybe it wasn't even intentional with, you know, the YouTube videos and things like that, where people got a sense of who you were as a person and, you know, the amazing skills. And, you know, I remember kicking on some of your videos and you're playing Black Sabbath and things that, you know, I think endeared you to a lot of fans. You know, I think
I could be anywhere in the world and somebody will walk up and go, man, I keep watching your Fred and Americana videos.
Yeah.
My favorite conversation is somebody will come up and go, man, when I'm in a rut, I just go watch your old Fred and Americana videos. What do you do? And I'm like, the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It,
you know, it was a whole other you know, pool of licks that I probably, you know, some are still in the bag, but some got left behind. So I'll go back. Oh, dude, I remember that lick. I got to start you playing that one again.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember seeing, you know, as a fan of Bon Jovi for more years than I care to admit, seeing, you know, when your name came up, the first thing I did was, you know, I feel like I've heard the name before, but why am I remembering that name? And I saw Frozen Ghost. I'm like, there's got to be more than Frozen Ghost, even though, don't get me wrong, love the Frozen Ghost. But then I started looking at, you know, the videos, and it really did endear the personality, you know, and the musicianship involved there.
I think that got me the gig, to be honest, you know, because John Shanks had been producing Bon Jovi since having that day, and he's a guitar collector.
Yeah.
So you could probably search 1955 Gibson Black Beauty, and I'd be in the top three on YouTube. And he'd just, let's check this guy out. And then he went down the Phil X rabbit hole.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then saw me. He had a studio at Henson, and then I saw me at Henson in Studio D working on a project. And he goes, man, I couldn't stop watching your videos last night. And it sounds like you can play and sing anything, and you're funny as F.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, told John about me, and then that's where that went.
Yeah, it's amazing, you know, sometimes the personality, even, and not just you, but I mean, there's guys out there that you can meet and immediately go, yeah, this is why, you know, this certainly helped them get this role. And there's people out there with personalities you can think, this is probably why they just got fired from the band that they just got fired. You know, because you live with these people. So that exactly. Certainly helps. The Phil X in the Drills, do you plan on taking that on a more broad tour, or is that still, you've got to work around, you know, the day job?
I'm actually waiting for the schedule from the day job, and then I'll fill a hole.
Yeah, I think probably the whole world, world waiting for that, the day job, if we'll call it. Dates as well. So, I mean, that's still going to be fun. Do you think there's something particular about your ability? Obviously, you've done a ton of studio work. You know, you don't have to look very far to find you on many, many records. Something particular about you as a musician that kind of lends itself to that, you know, being kind of a go-to guy when people need someone in a studio situation?
It's my favorite example. I've been talking about it all the time. It's like you become a chameleon, because if you're in the studio with Avril Lavigne on Tuesday and then Alice Cooper on Thursday, it's a different mindset. It's a different guitar. It's a different amp. It's a different approach in general. But it helped me expand my palette. And I bring that to everywhere I go, and I bring it to the Drills too. Like, especially on this new record, Power Ed and the Kisser has so many different vibes on it, which lent itself to having a different drummer on every song, which lent itself to having a different lyrical concept, you know, if you will.
Yeah.
So to me, it was just it showed a whole other depth to my writing, my playing, my singing. And I that's why I'm really proud of it, that the dimension expanded. And and now I think it broadens our fanship as well. You know, people are, I didn't like the punk side of the Drills, but man, when I listen to You Sunk My Battleship or Broken Arrow, I'm like, wow. It's, you know, I've been hearing that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I had to incorporate, you know, like Way Gone and Beat Me Up Scotty with Kenny Aronoff on drums has that punk side of the Drills. But there's always been a sense of humor in the lyrics, you know, and there's always been that interpretive lyric side of me where, even from the beginning, when somebody asked me one time, what did you mean by that lyric? And I always answer, what do you think I meant? And if they tell me something that's cooler than what I was intending.
That's it. Yeah. That's what I meant. Yep.
Yeah. That's a great story right there. So I just keep being interpretive. I love tongue in cheek. I love double entendre. I love all that stuff. So it's going to be always be there in the Drills.
How did playing with some of these, because you mentioned Kenny, for example, very powerful drummer, Tommy, bombastic. Did that infect or impact, I should say, maybe better, how you approached that song, or were the songs written before the drummer and the drummer just kind of
I
gave you
definitely
their part? How did that kind of come together?
had the drummer in mind when I had the song, or even when I wrote the song. I wrote "Fake the Day Away" to a groove that Tommy Lee was playing in a drum solo on YouTube, and it's funny because he slowed it down. I wrote the song to him, and then I sent him a vocal, and like I sent a lot of the drummers just a vocal and a guitar, because I didn't want any drum ideas. I wanted to be you. I wanted to be your personality. I don't want to give you any ideas, and then we'll go and record it. And then he sampled my vocal and my guitar, and put a loop on it and slowed it down, and sent that to me and said, "I love it, but this is the tempo." And I'm like, "You're the boss."
Yeah, I can
So
argue.
it was really, really great. That was the example of that. I had an idea of Find a Way. I wanted we were on the road with Bon Jovi, and we had a day off in Vegas. And I was talking to Tico, and I said, "Hey, I know you like to golf on days off, but if I have this track I think you'd be perfect for, can we go into the studio?" And he said, "Of course." And we went in the studio, and because he's got this, I love his funk vibe. And it's got a little Cuban in it, and the way it swings, and it's just his sense of fills and going into sections and stuff. I just loved it. So that was created on the spot, and I mean, you like even all the drummers. It's that kind of story where I just thought I was thinking about them when I created the song. And for instance, moving to California has Jeremy Spencer on it. But I wrote "Kept Moving to California" in like 2004, I think. And at the time, Jeremy was in the Drills. Or it might have been 2003, I forget. But he was in the Drills. And before he decided he wanted to go to his roots of metal and put Five Finger Death Punch together, which turned out.
Yeah,
But
that worked out.
yeah, totally. But I feel like I was really important to me to capture the personality. Working on Tommy Lee's solo records, I jammed with Tommy Lee a lot on his songs. A lot of people think Tommy Lee is more meat and potatoes because of Motley Crue, but being in the studio with him and jamming stuff, I saw a drummer that had so intense groove and imaginative fills going from one section to another, and all this. I wanted to capture that on the Drills tune. So and people hear that song and go, "Man, I can't believe it's Tommy on drums." It's insane what we got.
Does working in Bon Jovi give you some of that, what you mentioned, you listen to some of these guys and you kind of write with them in mind. Now that you're in a higher profile position, does that you see some of that in your session work where people are asking you to be less of a chameleon and more of Phil X when you play?
Yeah, actually, I have a great example of in when we were recording Forever, it was just John's idea was, "Hey, we're not recording drums in this city and vocals in New York and guitars in LA. We're not doing that anymore. I want it to be like Slippery. We're in this one studio until the record's done." And I thought that was amazing because there was incredible, incredible moments. And there was some things that I did on guitar that wouldn't have happened if we weren't all in the room. And Shanks being on set on the other guitar, and we're kind of like feeding off each other, kind of like I call it like the Brad Whitford Joe Perry vibe, right? So we're kind of feeding off each other on guitars, and we even joke about, "Hey man, you did that thing, and then I did that thing." Now we're like kids, talking about our new toys. But my favorite moment was on the last day. I had played recorded a solo for Living Proof, and Shanks came up to me and said, "Hey, John loves the solo that you did in Living Proof, but we got one more day in the studio tomorrow. Why don't you what let's beat it?" And I'm like, "Okay." So he goes, "Why don't you come in tomorrow with two ideas?" So I had my safe idea, which was come in with a cool solo, and then a reckless, intense, dangerous solo. And I work from light to heavy.
Right.
So they came in and John's like, what do you got? And I go, I got this. So I played the solo and changed a little bit here and there once I was listening to the track. And hey, okay, great. We got it. Love it. And he sat on the couch and looked on his phone and checked his email. And I'm like, I do have another idea, which is a little more reckless, a little more dangerous, intense. And John was like, I love what's there. You know, if you want to record something else, that's fine. And Shanks, and then I started doing this thing called bouzouki tuning that I came up with a really long time ago because I played bouzouki, which is a Greek instrument where the string doubled like a 12 string, for instance.
Okay.
So I tuned both the E string and the B string to B so they're the same pitch. I put them in the same notch. I don't want to get two guitar. Sure. But it creates a rub and the strings sound, it doesn't sound like a pedal or an effect. It sounds like what the hell's going on. So I started playing this theme off the top of my head, which made John jump off the couch and go, what the hell is that? Which for me, you know, making John Bon Jovi jump off the couch.
That's a bucket list moment. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then he explained it. He said, you know, that other solo was great, but it was almost like it could be anybody. This is unique and it's Phil X. I love it. This is going to be the last thing that we record for this record. We're not recording one more note. This is it. We're done. And that was, that moment is forever, you know?
Yeah, literally. So, wow, that's awesome. Phil, I want to thank you again. Your new record will be out on the 28th. Pow, right? Yes. The Kisser is available. There's a pre-order I also saw on, if you follow the links we'll put up, you can order a an autographed copy from, I believe it's Talk Shop Live, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, Talk Shop Live.
Get yourself a copy of that. And with any luck, we'll see you either with Phil X and the Drills or the day job in our neck of the woods soon. Either one would be most welcome. And thank you so much for your time today, man.
Thanks, man.
Art again, new album, Pow, Right in the Kisser, will be available from Phil X and the Drills March 28th. And as we talk about in the interview, hopefully before long, we will see some Bon Jovi dates. If you have not checked out the album Forever, really, really good listen and certainly worth your time. So check that out as well. And really look forward to seeing what's coming down the road from Phil, an amazing, amazing musician. I think the sky's really the limit for him and could really be, kind of a new wave guitar hero that I think a lot of people need. So really cool of him to take the time to do that. We're going to turn our attention now to another multi-instrumentalist who has been playing with Billy Idol. He also was with Rick Springfield, Julian Hatfield, to name just a few. His name is Paul Trudeau. He plays keyboards in Billy Idol's band, also very instrumental in the background vocals of Billy's live show. So was really excited to get a chance to talk to him. He's got a new single out called Three Little Things, which is going to be from his forthcoming album called Lost Diamond Boy, which I've had a chance to listen to. It's on Blue Elan Records. It'll be out later this year. That should be out later this summer, around August 1st. His previous album was back in 2017, I believe it was, Shirley Road. So really glad to see new music from him. Three Little Things, you know, not that Paul alone isn't cool enough, but also features guitar work from Steve Stevens, also obviously of Billy Idol's band. So really a cool listen and very stylistically different than what you might expect from Billy Idol's band. So it was a cool thing to listen to. So I will play you a little bit of Three Little Things. We'll get into that interview with Paul Trudeau.
Three little things can set you off. Move to the outside running. When I remembered I could take the fall, you decided that you lied to me. And why you laugh at my face inside?
Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome to Iron City Rocks. We have on the line from Billy Idol's band, we have Paul Trudeau on the line. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How's everybody doing?
Doing very well. A pleasure to get a chance to talk to you. You were here about a year and a half ago, close to maybe to 2 years with Billy on keys that night. And I saw you have a new record coming out later this summer. You've got a new single, Three Little Things, which features the amazing guitar work of Steve Stevens, which right. didn't hurt in capturing my attention either. But can you talk a little bit about the record Lost Diamond Boy, what folks can expect? I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people know you as the guy behind the keyboard, but on the cover, you've got a guitar. So we already know you're multi-instrumentalist. So can you talk a little bit about this particular record and the collection of songs?
Yeah, I mean, this Lost Diamond Boy came about a year or so ago, probably a little more at this point. I've been involved with this peripherally with this record label, Blue Alon, and Kirk Paycheck, who I've had a relationship with for, you know, 10 plus years, and coming off a show with another person, Kirk comes up and he goes, "Hey, we're going to have to do a record for you." And I was like, "Okay." And I kind of just kept gently, you know,
reminding
him. And I mean, it was kind of a very slow, it's a kind of learned that that's how he operates. He's sort of just like, I mean, he's super, you know, super busy. He's a great guy. And just to speak, I know you asked about the record, but I want to speak about this label a little quickly. It's a super artist friendly label. That's what I've always heard about it. And now my experience with Kirk and my A&R guy over there, Niels, is just like, I mean, I've been able to do exactly what I want. Like they have to kind of approve everything, but literally every step of the way, I've had creative control, which is kind of, I don't know. I haven't been on a lot of record labels, so I don't know if it's the norm or not. Doesn't seem like it's the norm. It seems like you got a lot of people making decisions.
Yeah. Aside from the artist. Yeah.
Right. And you know, like I've got a pretty solid idea what I want to do. So in any event, for this record, I kind of just kept writing and demoing up songs and sending them in. And, you know, I kind of ended up writing about 25, 30 songs. And at a certain point, my producer, Camilla Darling, and Kirk were like, "All right, let's do this record." And actually recorded 13 songs, kind of thinking they wouldn't all make the record, but is what ended up getting on the record was all 13 songs. I kind of operate in this, the label is traditionally a blues Americana kind of label. But you know, they also have Soul Asylum and, you know, Chris Shiflett from The Foos. Chris's stuff seems pretty, I love his stuff. And he's actually one of my favorite artists over there. But I kind of operate in this Americana / alternative space.
Is that kind of, you know, where you see yourself in large as a performer, is in that space? Or was this something that you kind of had to, you wrote with that kind of as a theme in mind,
you know,
for this particular record?
When I go back and look at stuff I wrote 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I'm basically doing the same thing. And it's, you know, it's sort of, if there's a country music influence, it's because of the country music the Beatles used to play, or the country music the Stones used to play, you know, I don't know that I have any solid country music influences. However, you know, like Sweet Virginia, that's a country song. And, you know, when I write, the phrase country doesn't even really apply, but, you know, and also, I've noticed the term Americana has grown to expand. You know, like, it means a lot of different things these days, which is great because, when I first came onto the label, I definitely was, a little bit of concern about, well, you know, because I write stuff that's, you know, I don't really like hard rock, but I write stuff that's alternative rock, you know, and I'm like, well, do these songs not go on this record because it's an Americana record? So, and that, again, that wasn't an issue. You know, my Camilla, my producer, basically was like, I think your voice is the through line. And so, I mean, you know, the variance of styles isn't enormous. And again, like I said, I listened to, I had a band called Radio Jones that is kind of just out there floating around on Spotify, like a lot of bands, but it's, if anybody wants to check that out, it's like, it's a band I had called Radio Jones. It's basically the same type of stuff I've been doing. So, you know, I mean, I guess you could argue, okay, so you're not growing at all as an artist, but it's really more like, this is just what I like to do. And I've just sort of always done it. And I didn't do this on purpose, but at least, like, I don't listen to much of my old stuff. I have some stuff when I first landed in LA, I was like really trying to like figure out who I was as a writer and an artist. And I was like, well, I should do this, I should do that. And I was kind of singing in a vein that I probably shouldn't have been singing. And so I can't say that there's not stuff floating around out there that I'm like, I shouldn't have attempted that. But pretty early on, I figured out what I like to do and how I like to sing and how I like to write.
Yeah, I mean, it's there is something, and you do bring up a great point about kind of Americana, and your reference to the Rolling Stones is certainly not lost, because you listen to an Exile on Main Street or some of those albums, and there's, you know, there is a the DNA of it, and the backbone that it's built on is obviously one thing, but there are many, many different flavors and colors and textures to that. You know, so,
yeah, absolutely.
And you're right about Americana and even country. I mean, you put on a Morgan Wallen record and you have to kind of take a step back for a second before he starts singing to realize that it is even a quote country song. You know, you're hearing drum loops and it very, very slickly polished. So I think country is even not necessarily what it was.
Totally. You know, totally. Yeah.
You know, it's, I mean, I think you could put out a Buddy Holly record today and argue it sounds more country than, you know, where in its era that was rock and roll. So the blurring of the lines is, you know, maybe your freedom to do whatever you want. You know, and if it's true to what you do today and it's true to what you did 30 years ago, hey, that's maybe it's not a lack of growth, but a consistency, you know. Nothing wrong with that. The songs, the natures of the songs themselves. I mean, do you write these kind of sketch these ideas over time? Like, you know, I'm sure you know, in traveling in a band such as Billy, or when you're time with Rick Springfield, you have a lot of downtime, I have to assume. Do you kind of sketch these out, you know, acoustic guitar when you're stuck on a bus, or do you write to a notepad, you know, scribbling ideas? Yeah, you know, kind of shuffled around.
I've kind of done all of the above. I mean, my record before this, and my last kind of like focused record was a record that is also on Spotify called Shirley Road, 2017. And the reason I bring that record up is because when I started playing with Billy, there's a lot of downtime, and I mean, so much so that I was like, okay, I need to bring a little recording studio. I mean, it could go out of my mind, you know, like they'll just, you know, they'll fly over to the UK and like Billy's doing something in London. So they'll park you in UK for like 6 days, which is lovely.
Yeah.
But you know, at a certain point you're like, well, I don't live here and I don't know anybody here. So I brought a little studio and actually had a very, very productive, it was actually the best thing ever, because if you, from a creative standpoint, first of all, writing in the UK when it's like pissing down rain all the time, it's like my favorite, because it just really lends itself to, well, I can't leave my room, it's raining outside, I'm just going to sit and write these songs. And pretty much the entire record, Shirley Road, I wrote on tour with Billy in 2016. And when I was writing that record, it was, you know, this is such a sort of cliche thing to say as a songwriter about, you know, oh, well, it's like therapy for me, or it's like, help me. But the truth about this record is that when I was writing these songs, like I literally, and this is Shirley Road, not Lost Diamond Boy, although I wrote Lost Diamond Boy from a similar place. But I was a lot more focused on that I'm doing a record that's going to go out to the world. When I was writing Shirley Road, I remember, like, it didn't matter to me if nobody ever heard these songs. Like, I wasn't writing them at all from the perspective of someone might listen to this. I didn't care if nobody ever heard it, which kind of gave me this freedom to literally write however and whatever I wanted. And I kind of continue that practice. I mean, it's a little way of kind of like a little, you know, Jedi mind trick on yourself. But the idea is, like, you can't write from the standpoint of thinking about how somebody later might, you know, it's just the worst thing in the world from a creator standpoint. And I mean, my other sort of spiel about my songwriting process was simply this, that for a long time I would write a song and I would put it on, you know, we used to have the little cassette things or whatever, any way to record it. Now we all do it on our phone. But I would come up with an idea, play it, I would refine it, I'd write the lyrics, go record it. And I was finding that at the end of the recording, like, I hated the song. Like, and like, I had just sort of refined the crap out of it. But then I would go back and listen to my original recording. And I'm like, well, I still really like that. Like, I still like the idea, but what I had turned it into, I don't like. So what that lent, you know, directed me to do was, all right, well, what if I just really stick with the very first thing I write and don't depart from it as much as possible? And so I did, wrote a song called Fireball. That the process went like this. I picked up a guitar and I started writing as if the song already existed.
Okay.
And I'm singing lyrics, and some of them make sense, some of them don't. But the key is the phrasing. There's something that's happening when you're writing off the top of your head, that phrasing is really good. And that's what I was doing that was killing my songs, is I was refining the phrasing, writing lyrics, and then kind of fitting the phrase around the lyrics. And I kind of flipped it and did the opposite. And now I stick as much as possible. I'm not saying I don't change stuff every now and then, or something really doesn't make any sense and you need to kind of try to, like, have it make sense. I don't set out writing a song with any idea of what the song is about. I kind of determine that as I'm writing the lyrics. And a lot of times, even when all the lyrics are done, I mean, the thing I always say, people are always like, well, what's that song about? And I mean, I don't mean to sound flippant or anything, but it's like, that's not my job to figure out what the song's about. Like, you know, what's it about to you? Like, I wrote the song, I wrote the lyrics, I like the way the lyrics sound, I like the way the lyrics sing, I like singing the song. It's not my job to tell you what the song's about. Having said that, there are times when you write a song, it's like a story song. There's one song I co-wrote. The only co-write on the record was by Bertie Barlow and Dave Darling, called Which Way to Go. That is a story song, and it's a real departure from how I normally write. Mm-hmm. But it's a great song, but it's kind of, you can only interpret it one way. The lyrics go like this. This is what it's about. I tend to like it when, it's not that I don't want songs to make sense. They make sense and they elicit a feeling or an emotion. It's just that I don't necessarily want to determine what that is for somebody.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I mean, I will say for years, I've always loved the writing of Bono, but I can't always tell you what he's getting at. Right. But I think sometimes the fact that you listen to some of these songs, and it is your mind as the listener interprets it. You process it through your frame of reference, and it becomes something to you as the listener that may have nothing to do with what the songwriter was thinking of.
Totally.
When you're doing, like you mentioned, the phrasing, do you kind of scat sing the song then as you're writing it to kind of work out a vocal melody? Or
kind of, but like I said, I mean one of my favorite things I hear other writers do is when the second verse is a complete departure from the first verse. And when I'm writing it, like, it might be, I play some progression, I sing some melody, sing some chorus, and by the time I get back to the second verse, I'd forgotten what I did on the first verse. But instead of stopping and listening, I just do something else. And and again, you know, I'll massage it here and there if it's really, you know, if I'm like, well, this melody's really stronger. It's not like I don't alter stuff. It's just that I try my best to stay true to the original spark, because again, like, way back when I figured this out, it was like, what was I doing that was ruining my songs? And it was refining them. It was like taking them away from where the original concept was. I also need to, I'll point out that a lot of times when I write with people, they hate that. And I'm always fighting for stuff. Like, well, this doesn't make sense. I'm like, what does it matter? You know, so collaborating is always an interesting process.
Yeah.
I mean, I love it. And it's a fun back and forth. But that's how come on Shirley Road, I wrote everything.
Yeah.
And on this record, Lost Diamond Boy, I wrote everything except for one song. And it's not really like a control thing. It's just, that's just how I want it to come out.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
Do you, like when you're writing then, do you just set the recorder to go and, you know, just I'll turn it off when I'm done with my writing session? And is that how you kind of capture some of this stuff? Because I imagine it's probably really easy to sing in a certain way, and then if you don't record it, forget what the hell you did. Does that, it's, you just record everything, or do you have listening back?
If I sit down and play, like I'll sit, a lot of times also the very first thing, like if I sit down, I haven't picked up the guitar in a while, and I pick it up and I play something and I sing something, I'll be like, okay, I should record that. Like I don't prejudge it. I'm like, is this anything? I don't know. I'll determine that later. So I just turn my phone on, go to the voice memo, play through a thing, and then I'll put it away for a minute. And then you come back to it, and then it's, you got a lot more clarity. You know, you come back to it and you can be like, well, oh, this is something, or nah, this is kind of bullshit, or, you know, I don't know what the cursing thing is.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, or this is too much like everything else I've done. You know what I mean? This is too normal, you know.
No, I get exactly where you're at, because sometimes when you write something, you get that little spark of creativity, which sometimes I swear comes with a little spark of adrenaline, and sometimes you can really easily either over inflate or under inflate your opinion of what you're doing, just to, you know, on the sheer fun of coming up and creating it.
Right.
But to take that step back and listen to it objectively, I think is a really cool idea.
So the heavy lifting happens when I'm sitting writing the lyrics. Like that's really, and it's also kind of the make or break. It's like, what happens then will determine, is this a good song or is this just a piece of shit? You know, it's like, so when I go to write the lyrics, and again, I'm staying really close to what it sounds like I'm singing. And then I kind of refine it from there. But again, my kind of like, you know, North Star is the phrasing and what vowels I'm singing, more so than anything else.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't really stray far from that. And then I find words that kind of fit within that, whether or not they make sense or not, you know.
Yeah. Let the listener decide. Right. So I'd be remiss not to ask, starting in earnest in late April and taking you the whole way through the summer, you guys are going to be doing the Nice Data tour again. Billy Idol with Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, which also kind of coincides to the release of the album. Are you able to kind of slip away on, there's not a lot of off days on this tour, you know, to do any kind of like club shows along the way, or how do you kind of to get the wheels rolling on your album while you're out trying to do a, you know, a full on Live Nation Shed tour?
Right. That's an excellent question, and I don't know that I have the answer for that. I'm going to try. I'm going to definitely, you know, I mean, if there's like, if markets and timing, you know, I'm obviously at the whim of the how the tour is set up.
Yeah.
But again, there are days off, and so if days off, I'm definitely going to attempt to do that. And then we do come back for breaks. Like, I mean, we go out and then we'll come back for, you know, we'll be back home for like a solid month and then go back out again. So it's not like, you know, it's not like the old days where you just hit the road and you're just going, I don't, you know, Billy
200 dates a year kind of thing.
The way he put it, he just, I remember him saying, he goes, I just don't want to be uncomfortable. You know, it's like, okay. You know, like I get it. Right. Yeah. Why would he? I mean, you know, he wants to tour, but he doesn't want to beat himself up, you know.
Yeah, he's earned the right to take it. I'm actually in the process of reading his book now, and you read some of those early tours, it just you wonder how anybody would have the energy to do all those shows. But you know, this is I think a kind of a, for the the towns that are lucky enough to have got this show on the bill, this is an excellent event to get out there for. And hopefully we can get you in the area doing some live music. We're obviously a stop if you happen to be in between Ohio and Philadelphia.
Right.
There in May, you know, you want to stop off and play some shows in May in this area. We'd love to see you. The album itself drops August 1st. Is that correct? Okay. So you'll have that so people can pick that up, and we'll post a link to your website. And then hopefully we'll see you out on the road. Paul, I want to thank you so much for the time today talking about the process.
Thank you, Vert. Thanks for having me.
All right. Paul Trudeau, the new album set to be released on or about August 1st. The album is called Lost Diamond Boy and featured the song we played a little while ago called Three Little Things. That obviously features Steve Stevens. So lots of cool things going on in the Billy Idol camp. Had a chance to pick up a copy of the Morrison Project from Billy Morrison, Billy Idol's other guitar player. He plays alongside Steve Stevens and has for years. Really, really cool album. A lot of great guests on that album. And I was really excited to listen to Paul's album, which is stylistically, as I mentioned, very different. So it was really cool. And then we got word that Billy Idol is releasing an album later this year. And also going on a cross-country tour with Billy Idol and Joan Jett. And the Blackhearts are touring together. Unfortunately, not in Pittsburgh, but we can hope. We can hope that maybe they add some additional dates or second legs or maybe it's, you know, a fall tour. So fingers crossed. But in the meantime, you can check out a lot of great music from the guys in the band. So I want to thank both our guests, Paul and obviously Phil X, for taking the time to join us. You can check us out at ironcityrocks.com, ironcityrocks@gmail.com. If you have comments on the show, things you like, things you don't like, bands you want to hear from, bands you never want to hear from again, be honest, love to hear it. We are on all the social medias as Iron City Rocks. No spaces, no dots, no underscores, nothing, just Iron City Rocks. And until next time, we want to thank you so much for taking the time to listen.